Ariel Helwani's MMA show is presented by Modelo, brewed for those with a fighting spirit.
Hey everyone, it's Ariel Helwani. Hope you're doing well on this Wednesday afternoon. I am so very excited about today's episode of the pod. I mean, holy smokes, George St. Pierre and Shaquille O'Neal. Just when I thought I could not outdo myself, I have gone and outdone myself again. I mean, two of the greats in their respective sports, the pride of Saint-Isidore, Quebec, Canada, George St. Pierre, who I consider the greatest of all time in MMA, and then arguably the greatest big man in the history of the National Basketball Association, Shaquille O'Neal, will join me to talk about his love of mixed martial arts and his new show, Shaq Life. So stay tuned for that. And as you've probably heard me say before, I love the NBA. I love basketball. Grew up a huge basketball fan. My favorite athlete of all time, Patrick Ewing. My favorite team, the 90s Knicks. My favorite coach, Jeff Van Gundy. Well, guess what? On this week's episode of the Woj Pod, the great Adrian Wojnarowski sits down with not only Patrick Ewing and Jeff Van Gundy. When I heard that he was doing this episode, I had to block off 45 minutes of my day and just sit down and consume it all, inject it into my veins. I mean, these were two of my favorite people in sports growing up, and it was so great to hear about their memories of the Bulls-Knicks rivalry, the 90s Knicks in general, made them so special. I felt like I was 13 years old all over again. So I cannot suggest this enough. You got to go listen to this episode of the Woj Pod. Jeff Van Gundy, Patrick Ewing, get it wherever you get your podcasts. Also, another reminder, today's episode contains language that may not be suitable for all audiences, so listener discretion is advised. Back in your life on this Wednesday, April 15th, 2020. Hello again, everyone. I hope you're doing well on this Wednesday afternoon. And a reminder that today's show is presented by Modelo, our good friends over at Modelo. Modelo Espacial, brewed for those with a fighting spirit. On today's episode, we will be talking to George St. Pierre, the great George St. Pierre, welterweight champion, middleweight champion, in my opinion, the greatest of all time. And also Shaquille O'Neal about his love of mixed martial arts and his new show, Shaq Life. A new episode premieres Thursday night on TNT, and you'll see some familiar faces on that episode. Jorge Masvidal, Kayla Harrison, Francis Ngannou, Greg Hardy. He actually grapples Greg Hardy later in the series. So great to catch up with Shaquille O'Neal. He's a huge MMA fan. I think you're going to like this very much. Of course, since we last spoke, a lot has happened since DC and Helwani on Monday, and of course, since last week's Wednesday pod with Chael Sonnen. So we know by now UFC 249 not happening this Saturday. That was quite the emotional affair. Dana White telling a whole host of people that, you know, they were going to stand down because Disney and ESPN asked them to, and that they were going to take a bit of a break. But then he comes out Tuesday night and he says that they are planning on resuming action on May 9th. Now, if you heard Monday's episode of DC and Helwani, I told you that they were starting to tell managers that they were hoping to return May 16th at the Apex. Well, yesterday, Dana White told our own Brett Okamoto that they're hoping to have their next pay-per-view on May 9th, which was the date of UFC 250, location TBD, and he even laid out the entire card. Now, this comes after the state of Florida said and deemed World Wrestling Entertainment, who has their performance center in the state of Florida, as an essential business. So everyone started to think like, oh, wow, is the UFC going to come to Florida as well? Now, they're not saying where. Florida has been discussed from what I'm told. Nevada has been discussed. California has been discussed. Oklahoma has been discussed. It's going to be really interesting to see how this all plays out. And also interesting to note, why did he come out and say this all to everyone? Why did he come out and tell everyone when it was so secretive and sensitive a week ago? Why come out and tell the world that you're doing this? Why not just kind of let it, you know, flow and fly under the radar? Not sure why he did that. I wonder if there are other reasons, but it sounds like they are revving those engines and they want to get back to business. Now, the card that he laid out to Brett Okamoto looks like this. Tony Ferguson versus Justin Gaethje. They are both on board. Henry Cejudo versus Dominic Cruz for the bantamweight title. Ferguson Gaethje, by the way, would be the main event for the interim lightweight title. So they're going back to that. Felicia Spencer versus Amanda Nunes for the women's featherweight title. That fight was supposed to happen in Brazil on May 9th. Francis Ngannou versus Jairzinho Rozenstruik. This would be the third time they try to book it in a month. It was supposed to happen March 28th, then April 18th, and now on this proposed May 9th card. Jeremy Stephens versus Calvin Kattar. Donald Cerrone versus Anthony Pettis meeting again. How about that? Greg Hardy versus Jorgen De Castro. Alexio Linick against Fabricio Werdum. Carla Esparza against Michelle Waterson, Jacare Souza versus Uriah Hall, Vicente Luque versus Nico Price, and Charles Rosa versus Bryce Mitchell, which is a really great fight. So top to bottom, that's a really great card. A lot of the same fights that were supposed to happen this weekend. Let's see if they can get this done. I wouldn't celebrate just yet, but it sounds like they're really eager to get rolling. It sounds like they're really eager to resume action and to be first. A lot can happen between now and May 9th, but this is what they're working on right now. So stay tuned on that front. For now, though, let's turn our attention to my conversation with George St. Pierre. It is always a privilege and an honor to talk to George St. Pierre. I consider him the greatest of all time, and this has nothing to do with the comments John Jones made about me earlier in the week. I've said this time and again. It's because he avenges two losses, and he doesn't have any PED infractions on his resume, and because he walked out on top as the middleweight champion after he beat Michael Bisping at UFC 217. Doesn't do a lot of interviews, but we got him for about an hour, and it was so great to reminisce, to pick his brain, and to even talk about UFC 83 when he beat Matt Serra in that rematch 12 years ago next week in Montreal. What a great time this was. I hope you enjoyed the chat. So what has life been like for you since announcing your retirement? Are you comfortable? Are you happy? I mean, you're only 38 years old, right? So typically in life, we don't retire at 38, but for you, it was a little different. What has it been like this past year?
Yeah, no, I'm the happiest man in the world. I wouldn't want to change my place to anybody else. You know, I'm very happy. In fighting for an athlete has a window, you know, and you want to retire from the sport. You don't want a sport retiring you.
When you took the break, when you said goodbye, did you want to say goodbye to the sport in general? Like, did you find yourself not watching it anymore, not really, like, sitting down for the big fights? Did you feel like you needed a mental break from everything involving MMA?
No, you mean when I took my retire or after?
Yeah.
No, it's not that. It's that we were working, trying to make a big fight with Khabib at the time, and it didn't materialize. And if it's to go back into the same routine I did before, I've done it for so long, I don't have the same motivation as I did before. So if you lack motivation, you know what I mean, you better stop, you know, because me, I know myself, I know I perform the best when I'm on the edge, you know, like when it's do or die. And if it's to go back to do the same routine, I find myself kind of not bored, because every fight is very dangerous. But for that reason, I decided that it was not a good idea for me to continue.
I know you were vocal about the Khabib fight, but did you find yourself ever getting the itch, like while watching anyone else and saying like, this is interesting, this might get me back?
No, of course. Sometimes I watch the fight and you know, it goes by waves. You know, sometimes when I'm in the gym or I watch a fight, sometimes I'm excited and I'm looking at the fight and I'm like, man, I know I can beat these guys, you know, and then after I wake up in the morning or before I go in bed and I tell myself like, what the hell I'm thinking, you know, like, hell to this, you know, I don't want to go back into that stressful lifestyle, you know, because I love what fighting gave me, you know, the freedom, you know, of course, the wealth, the money, all the advantage that comes with it, but I actually don't like to fight. I never enjoy 1 second in the octagon in my entire career, you know. I just like to do it because I'm just very good with it, and I like what it gives me, but I don't like actually the actual fight. It's very stressful.
So it's interesting that you say that, because next week is the 12-year anniversary. Do you remember of what? Of what famous fight of yours? 12 years, April 19th, 2008.
That's a good question. I'm not sure. 2008.
UFC 83 at the Bell Center, Centre Bell against Matt Serra.
Yeah.
The first ever
my revenge.
Fight in Canada.
Isn't
that amazing? 12 years next week.
Wow. Time flies, man. It's crazy. It is insane. You know, it's crazy. That was one of the best moments of my career. It was a home fight. My parent, my friend, everybody was there. The first fight in Canada, it was a dream come true for me.
So the reason I brought this up now is because I rewatched the fight last night. And after the fight, you said to Kenny Florian, because Kenny Florian was the color analyst, not Joe Rogan, you said, this is the happiest moment of my life. But just a couple minutes ago, you said you were never happy fighting. So how could that have been the happiest moment of your life if you were never actually happy fighting?
Yeah, it was the happiest moment of my life when I won the title. But if you would have asked me that a few minutes before, I was not very happy. I was very stressed. I think what make me happy is the feeling of achievement, you know, being able to, the feeling of freedom. It's something that in order to obtain, you need to go in, to put yourself into a suffering mode, you know. There's no pleasure without suffering. And fighting, it's a love-hate relationship. I hate the fact that I don't know the outcome of the fight before the fight happened, because you work so hard and the idea of failure is just unbearable. And for me, my pride, it's one of my best thing, my worst thing in the same time. That's what helped me to stand up straight against adversity. But in the same time, it drives me completely insane, because I'm so proud that when I put myself into it, it's so important to succeed, and failure is not an option. And unfortunately, nobody is invincible. And I failed twice in my career. But these two failures that I had made me better and stronger. But it was at the time that it happened, it was just unbearable for me. The idea of failure, it's crazy. You know, I think if you want to be successful in a sport like mixed martial art or anything, if you do something and you want to be the best at, you need to be a little bit crazy. You need to be obsessive. And that's what I brought into the sport. My obsession allowed me to do great things in the game, I think.
When you say completely insane, it drives you completely insane. Like, how unbearable was that feeling? Like, at its height, how much did it hurt you?
When you have a fight, let's just put it this. So when you have a fight coming up, you would constantly think about it. You know, as much as a man will think about sex, you will think about fighting. Even worse, you know, when you know the fight is coming, it's like a funnel. The closer you get to the fight, the more you think about it, and it becomes an obsession. You eat it, you drive it. When you drive your car, before you sleep, you think about it constantly, all the time, not only in training. And that was one of the problems for me. I couldn't pull the plug. It was very hard for me. The moment that I finish a fight and I raise my arm, there was another guy calling me out, so I didn't have any break. It was very hard. So that's why when I took my retirement and people asked me, hey, do you want to go back into this? If I would have fight, I would have fight. But on my turn, I would not like to fight and go back into that title defense. I'm past that. I it's too stressful for me. And if I do that, if I keep doing this, I felt like the stress will kill me. You know, like maybe I will die of a cancer or something. For me, it was unbearable.
Is there any part of you over the past year and change since you announced your retirement in February of 2019 that misses the stress a little bit? Because when you're stressed, you're also a bit alive, that those nerves.
I don't miss the stress at all. I miss the accomplishment of an achievement. You know, like I miss, you know, the last step that you take if you try to claim a Mount Everest. The last step that you claim and you made it to the top, and wow, that's what I miss. I don't miss being called out. I don't miss being in a promotion to promote my next fight and a trash talk back and forth and being stressed about the outcome of the upcoming fight. I don't really miss that. I miss, you know, to be with my training partner, trainer, during training camp and having a dinner, you know, it's like a brotherhood. These moments I miss and I will remember for the rest of my life. But the stress of the fight itself, the endless night without sleeping because you're constantly recreating different scenario in your head before the fight, this is insane. It drives me completely insane. This I don't miss at all. I just missed the achievement, the winning, this is fun. But it lasts for a very brief moment.
You know, I was talking to Chael Sonnen recently, and he told me that the biggest regret of his career is that he didn't enjoy 1 minute of his career. Looking back now, he didn't have fun. He didn't smile at all. Do you relate to that? Did you enjoy any of it?
I enjoy when I won. I enjoy the freedom that it gives me. I enjoy of course, the money, the woman, the glory, the prepare, you know, the, when you're training, when you're not preparing for a fight, I love that. You know, I love to train, but when you're not preparing for a fight, when you get ready for a fight, it's not about having fun. It's about performance. And that's why sometimes when it become business, it become performance, the fun is gone. But when you fight after and you win and you have the result that you want, now it's fun to have the achievement. You know what I mean? It's a very hard thing to explain for a guy who never, for my fan, some of them who never competed. And even I talk to many fighters, most of guys, they really enjoy the process. They're very happy. I corner a friend of mine, his name is Nasrat, a few months ago. And he was in the locker room very happy. You know, he was like, man, I'm so excited to be there. And I look at him, I'm like, man, you're a psychopath, bro. You're like, it's insane. Like most of the guys, I think they, maybe I'm different, but maybe I'm a coward. I don't know. I'm scared to death. What I do before a fight is I put a mask. I'm pretending that for me it's impossible to fail, but this is only a mask. This is not how I truly feel inside. I'm very, very scared. I'm not excited. I remember I've seen a sport psychologist, and the sport psychologist used to tell me, George, stop saying you're scared. You're not scared. You're excited. I'm like, dude, I'm excited if I, you know, I'm excited if I haven't eaten for 3 days and I know I'm about to eat my favorite dish. I mean, I'm excited if I'm seeing a beautiful naked woman. I'm excited if I if it's minus 15 in Montreal and I know next week I'm going on vacation on the beach in a hot, warm, exotic place. I'm excited. I'm not excited to go fight in a cage against another psychopath that's gonna try to kill me, and maybe I'm gonna be humiliated. I'm not excited about that. I'm scared. And I think it's normal. I'm just, you know, I mean, I'm different. Or maybe all the guys are liars in the business of fighting. I don't know. But I was very scared all the time. And I think that scare, that fear, maybe made me sharper, made me stronger. Maybe in a way it helped me.
What memories, if any, do you still have from UFC 83, that first show in Montreal? I remember the buzz leading up to that fight was so great in the city. Everyone was so excited. The rematch, right? You were coming back. What do you remember about that night?
Oh, man. One of the crazy things I remember is Bruce Buffer was announcing, you know, he was saying in the blue corner, wearing weighing, and I couldn't even hear him. The crowd was so loud. I just saw his lips moving. And when he said, George St. Pierre, when is your time to raise your arm, or, you know, because he introduced you, I just follow his lips and I couldn't understand him. It was insane because I felt like I was close to, you know, if let's say you're in a club and you're close to a speaker and you're so close that you cannot hear anything and you feel the vibration. It was a crazy feeling. The crowd was so loud, I could feel the vibration, like the wind. If you do that, you feel a wind on your, I could feel that in every inches of my body. It was a crazy, crazy event, a very special moment for me.
And your family was there?
Yes, I fought in Toronto. It was like 50-something thousand people in the crowd in Toronto. But that night, the crowd in Montreal, because maybe it's a smaller venue. It feels like it was 100,000 people, you know, like to me, it feels even worse. If not worse, it feels, I would say, better. I mean, at the time when they introduced me, I was scared. I was like we just talked about, I was, you know, it was a different feeling. You know, it was, I never felt anything like this before.
You wore the red gi out to the cage. Was there ever a reason why you picked red, black, sometimes white? Any particular reason for that?
It was a gi that I was been given to me I'm a karate. My first martial art is karate background. You know, I did Kyokushinkai and Shidokan Kai. And it was a gi that was given to me by a master in Shidokan, you know. So he gave it to me, and I wanted to wear it as a for motivation.
Yeah, it's amazing because now, you know, the fighters in the UFC, they can't wear their own outfit, right?
Yeah.
They have to wear. Doesn't that bother you a little bit? That's what made you so special.
Yeah.
People loved wearing the headbands, the gi like you. It takes some of the personality away.
Exactly. It takes away from the show a little bit. Some guys, I remember, it was Sukuju used to come with the Predator, you know. It was cool. Kenki Sudo had an incredible entrance, you know, like he was like wearing a costume. I think it makes it for the show. I think they take away some part of the show for the fan doing that, and the personality and the charisma of the fighter. Yes.
And one thing I've always wanted to ask you, because you did it right before you walked into the cage, you did the thing where you licked your fingers and then you rubbed your nipples. All the Jacksons guys did that. Why did you guys do that? I've never gotten the answer to this.
It make you disconnect for a split second because you're so stressed. You only think about this. Then you're like, oh, it's true. I got to do this. And it just make you disconnect for a split second. It's crazy. It make you remember to do something that has nothing to do with the fight. So it slice
wow.
the situation a little bit. It make you reset a little bit.
Who came up with that?
I think I'm the one who did it first.
Wow, really? Okay, because then after Rashad did it, all the Jacksons guys did it.
Well, I'm not a superstitious guy, but when something works and you don't have any other way to make it better, you just keep going to do it.
Did someone tell you about this, or you did it on your own?
I did it on my own. It's something that I didn't know it was like a cult that everybody did it as well. I didn't know. You just. I know maybe Rashad did it one time, but it's something that helps you slice the situation, you know? You're very stressed. It makes you just say, hey, life is, it's not all that, you know? You're here, you're alive, you know? Be aware that you're here. You know what I mean?
Because you were coming off a title loss, I mean, you lost to Matt, and then you came back and you beat Matt Hughes to get the interim title, but then you were fighting Matt again to regain the official belt. Were you more nervous going into that fight than any of your other fights because you had to avenge that loss against the guy that, you know, everyone thought you should have beat very easily the year before?
Every fight that I had, I was more and more nervous. My last fight against Michael Bisping was the worst.
Wow.
However, I would say the in terms of nervousness and my skill of being able to deal with nervousness, the worst that I had, it was my first fight with Matt Hughes. Because I was young at the time, and I remember when I was younger, I used to think that the nerves will go away with time. I will be able to stay more calm and relaxed. What I've learned with my experience is that it doesn't go away. It gets even worse. However, your skills of dealing with it gets better because you accept it. You accept the fact that you're not going to sleep well the night before the fight. And it's normal because you know you're getting into what you're getting into. But when I fought Matt Hughes the first time, I remember I couldn't sleep the night before, not at all, because I constantly make scenario in my mind. In every scenario that I made in my mind, it was not a lot of scenario that I saw myself win. You know, I was seeing myself lose all the time. So I tried to think real hard of how can I come back on top and make it better. But I didn't see any positive imagery coming out by myself for that fight. You know, normally I see myself win, I see myself lose. It's about, I would say, 70-30. For the fight with Matt Hughes, it was 30-70. It was pretty bad. I say maybe even 90-10, you know? So mentally, it was very hard for me to deal with the nerves of that fight because I didn't have the experience and I was being thrown into a title fight against my idol at the time. It was like a monument. Matt Hughes was the best guy, one of the best welterweight at the time, you know? He used to grab people, slam them on the ground like a potato bag, you know, and it was very scary to fight a guy like Matt Hughes, and I had a very hard time dealing with this at the time.
And of course, you lost that fight, but then you came back UFC 65 and you finally won the belt. You mentioned the Bisping fight, and afterwards you revealed that you had colitis. Do you think that the nerves led to the colitis as well? Not only your diet, but the nerves as well? Because that could happen, right?
Yeah, I believe so. And I believe most of people has genetic associate problems with. In my family, I made a 23, I think it's like the DNA testing, and you can see what is in your genetic is more problematic. And for me, it's the digestive system. And I see in my family some people, like some of my auntie or one of my grandfather had colon cancer and things like that, or Crohn. And for me, I think it's because of the genetic and also the stress. It's a big part of it. Of course, the diet was not very good, but what I've done to try to load myself with so much stuff, I think it's a mixture of everything. You know, we don't always know the cause of things, but I think that's probably what it was.
Do you have any symptoms now?
No, it's all gone now. Gone. I cure it. Of course, they had to go on medication, but I discovered intermittent fasting and prolonged fasting. And I changed some stuff in my life. Like I started to eat fermented food, and I did intermittent fasting and prolonged fasting, and it healed me. I don't need any medication. It healed me for good.
Wow. Could I ask, how much do you weigh right now?
I'm about the same, 185 pounds.
Because there was a point, pictures were coming out of you, and you were looking very, very skinny. Were you trying to see if you could make 155 or to see how low you could go? Because I remember there were some training photos of you and people were like, wow, GSP looks different.
I'm much more leaner now than I was even when I was, I'm saying much more, maybe not much more, but I'm leaner now than I was when I was 25 and I'm 38 years old. I wish I would know intermittent fasting and prolonged fasting before. Because I used to come from that culture that, oh, you need your protein after your a protein shake, you know, and things like that. But I don't believe in it anymore.
So with this diet, do you think you could, if you wanted to, make 155?
Yeah, I could make 155. Yes, I always could. I'm not a big 170. There's guys that fight at 170. They off season they go to 200 pounds. I never been 200 pounds. I'm always around 185. When I wake up in the morning, 183, 182. You know, that's what I walk around. You know,
how close did the talks get with Khabib?
It didn't go at the time. It was a they had other plan, and for them it was. I know Khabib wanted to have that fight. I want it. But the thing is, the UFC, if you look on the UFC side, I think it's normal if I put myself in their shoes. They didn't want to take the risk of me winning the title and then after vacant again, because we even proposed that I didn't want it even for the title. I would rather do it not for a title. For me, it was because I considered Khabib right now the best fighter in the world, and he wanted to fight me as well, so I thought it was a good fan fight, you know, for the fans.
But they didn't want it.
No, they didn't want it. They had the other plan for Khabib, and I understand that. They had a lot to lose, you know, and if they invest into that fight and their investment goes out after, it's not a good move, you know. So that, in a way, I could take that as a compliment, because maybe they saw me as a threat. For them, that's mean. Maybe they thought I could have won the fight. If they would have let me fight him, maybe it's because they think I would have lose. So that's why.
After you retired, after you had the press conference, until today, have you ever talked to Dana White?
I must have said hi sometime, but we never talk about me fighting or anything like this. I haven't talked to him. I don't think I've talked to him. He just wrote me a very nice text. I just say, because when I retired, I text him. I say, thank you very much for all those years and everything. I know we had problems sometime, but it was strictly business. And I understand you're the best manager. And if I can do what I did If I have what I have in my life right now, it's because of you, because of what you did for the sport. And not only me, all the fighters should be thankful to you for what you did in that way. And he say, thank you. He said that you had a great career. Nobody retired on top. You did it. Congratulations. You know, he was very nice.
Mm. And even when you had the press conference in Montreal, like, you still kept the door like a little bit open. Is it fair to say the door is completely closed now?
Man, it would need a complete 180 degree turnaround right now. Sometimes I'm training with the guys. I still get it, man. I'm not in fighting shape, and you're never in fighting shape when you're not getting ready for a fight, because it's like a sprinter. A sprinter in training, he doesn't do under the 10 second all year around. He does under the 10 second, like certain specific time when he peaks. Fighters are the same. They're in fight shape when they peak, you know, because they know there's a fight. So I know it will not take me much to be in fight shape. I can still reach that. However, the fighter is always the last person to know when is time to stop, you know? So in my mind, I still think I get it, and I believe I can still be champion. It's just that I don't know if I'm, you know, my trainer say yes as well. I just don't know if I wanted to get back into it. It would need something that interests me, or, like I said, something happened like from the left field, and I never saw it coming. And I'm like, man, maybe, yeah, let's do it, you know?
But other than Khabib, does anyone else interest you? Because, you know, your name keeps getting brought up all the time. Kamaru
really
talks about you. Oh, all the time. Everyone says they want to fight you. Woodley for years. Usman now saying he wants to fight you. You know, Khabib, even when you retired, said, no, please, let's do this. Is there anyone else?
It's no amazing. Way.
Yes.
I didn't know that. I still watch the fight, but I don't watch the press conference and all the drama. Now I just don't like it. I just like the fight. I watch the fighter that I like to watch fight the most, you know. There's too many fights. There is almost every weekend now. It's not like it used to be. It used to be like an happening, like the card used to be more loaded. Now it's more every week, you know. So there's a few guys that I like to watch fight that I watch it, and I've never missed their fight. Like I you just told me that. I didn't know that. That's funny.
Who are some of the guys that you make a point to watch, or girls?
Oh, I like to watch guys for two reasons. Some are for skills reason, and some are for drama reason. Some of my favorite fighters were villains. They were not. Some of the guys that I like to watch fight the most are not necessarily the guy that are acting like role model. I used to like Tito Ortiz. I used to like Chuck Liddell, of course, but Chael Sonnen. I really like Chael Sonnen. I thought his trash talking and his fighting skill was brilliant, because he didn't use profanity like a lot of the fighter. He was very smart, and I always admired that of him. I never was able to do like he did, you know. It was something that I really admire. It was how he promoted. It was insanely good. And I like that. I like the build up to the fight. And when the fight starts, you have goosebumps because you're emotionally involved. That's why Chael was good. And I like to see different fighters too, for different reasons. I like Anderson Silva, of course, John Jones. I like to watch him fight. I like Adesanya now. I really love Dominic Cruz, Khabib, of course, Conor McGregor. You know, he creates drama. There's many guys that I love to see fight, you know. Sejudo is one of the best. I love to see him fight. There's a lot of guys that I never miss their fight, because I'm a big fan.
You know, it's interesting that you mentioned Anderson. Today's his 44th birthday. That for a long time was a fight that people wanted to see, and there was some, you know, flirtation that it might happen. If I ask you, is there one guy that you wish you could have fought that you regret not fighting? Is the answer to that question Anderson, or is it someone else?
Yeah, it could be Anderson. It's just maybe, I guess his timing and everything was not together like I like for to be like the stars were not aligned for make it happen, you know. Probably if I would have said, if I would have won it as bad as I would want it for another fight, maybe I would have, it would have materialized. It's just that I was focusing on being the best welterweight and to have more title defense to make history, you know. But if I would have said, I want to fight the guy to beat the guy, maybe I would have done it. That's when I came back after many years of, after more than 4 years of retirement, one of the big critics that I had is that I never went up a weight class to fight the champion. That's one of the reasons I did that. And it was something that I could have done before, but if you look at many guys that have done that before, like Roy Jones, when you go up, after you cannot go back down. And one of the mistakes too, and I did it against Bisping, is I thought in my mind, if I fight a bigger man, I should gain weight to be big. Then after, I realized it was a mistake because I just should stay the same. You know what I mean? Of course, the laws of physics will favor the heavier guy. Of course, it's physics, you know. But I believe if I stay healthy and the same weight that I am, I'm at my best. I'm at my best right now, better than if I would try to gain weight. You know, Georges St-Pierre right now would be better than the Georges St-Pierre who's gaining weight. That's what I believe.
And I know you're very humble, but when it comes to the greatest of all time debate, I think the three main people that are brought up are you, as far as the UFC is concerned, you, Anderson Silva, John Jones. I think those are the three main ones, Demetrius Johnson a little bit as well. But the one thing that you have on your resume that they don't have is you don't have any PED infractions, right? You never tested positive for steroids. So that's why you are the greatest. Also, you avenged your only two losses. When I say you're the greatest, do you agree with me honestly? In your heart of hearts, do you walk around and say, I was the greatest of all time to fight in the UFC? Can you say that?
I don't think that. I don't think there is nobody the greatest. Let me explain that to you. There's three guys, right? This guy will beat this guy. This guy will beat this guy. And this guy will beat this guy. That's how it is in this game, you know? Mm-hmm. Like this guy is better than him. Him is better than him. Him is better than him. It's just a matter of timing, and everybody can beat everybody at any given days. It's about odds. You know, you'll make a fight 10 times most against the top guy. The guy will probably not win it the 10 times. Maybe it will, depending the situation, you might win 9 out of 10. And style makes fight too. There is guys that has your numbers. You don't know why they have your number. So in the fight game, you know, it's not a straight line. You know, sometimes you have to go here. Oh, you lose one, then you come back. That's how it is in the fight games, you know. So when you say the best of all time, when I was young, I wanted to be the best of all time. But when I get older and I have more experience, I realize that it's just a fugazi. It doesn't exist. You cannot be the best fighter on the planet. There will always be one guy that will beat you. And I know some people will say, no, it's not true. But if you've trained with many different training partners, with different people, you'll find out it's true. You know, there is guys that are better than you. Maybe they're not fighting. But if you fight them in the gym, you'll see that they're going to beat you. It's like that. That's how the world works, you know. There is no better guy. There will always be one guy that will have your number. He will beat you. You know, that's how it is. Unfortunately, there's no better guy. You know, there's any given day, one guy will be better than the other. When you fight a guy and you're a champion because you only beat that guy that night. It doesn't give you the right to put you above all the rest of the roster. That's how most of people see it, but that's not how I see it myself right now. Before, that's how I used to think, but now I realize it's all an illusion.
You know, let me ask you this. John Jones, Conor McGregor, you know, some very famous fighters, they have had trouble outside of the cage, right? And in your prime,
I mean, you were a megastar. People were saying you were the most famous athlete in Canada. In Montreal, you couldn't go anywhere without someone recognizing you. How did you avoid anything like that throughout your entire career? You never had anything negative, no negative headlines, drama, controversy. How did you avoid that because there was so much scrutiny on you?
Ariel, I'm not a perfect man. I have a lot of vice. However, I try to force myself to be a role model. That's a choice that I made. You know, I made a lot of party and do some crazy thing, but I was fortunate enough to have great people around me that protect me. And I was able, I had enough clairvoyance or awareness to choose who I wanted to be with. I can be nice to everybody, you know, like I'm nice to everybody, but I let inside my life come in, not everybody. There's a lot of people that I don't let inside my life, you know, this is very important for me. And, I have a small circle that is very small and very tight. And, when you start to have a lot of success, you know, you have to be nice to everybody, but you can't let everybody comes in, you know, because some bad people will pollute you and have a bad influence on you. And, of course, everybody has vice. Nobody is perfect, and I'm not perfect by no means. But I was able to have a brand and to maintain my brand the best as I can, you know, because if you have a brand and it takes an entire life to build it, but it takes 1 second to crush it. That's what my father always told me.
Ah, what a great chat with GSP. Before we continue it, let me tell you about our good friends over at Modelo. Oh my gosh, how much do I love Modelo? Of course, you know by now they are brewed for those with a fighting spirit. You also probably know that Modelo is the official beer of UFC and partners with the likes of UFC double champion Amanda Nunes. They also present this show, your favorite MMA show. Anyway, the fighting spirit means never giving up, even when the odds are against you. Great beers are like great fighters. It doesn't matter where you come from. It matters what you're made of. Modelo's been the gold standard since 1925. It is a crisp, Pilsner-style lager that set the standard for authentic Mexican beer. Modelo uses premium hops to give the golden lager its crisp taste. Now, is there anything better than saying a golden lager has a crisp taste? I mean, what's better than that? I could just feel the thirst getting quenched as I speak about this, the crisp taste of Modelo. Especial. Espacial. Modelo Espacial. So the next time you're watching a UFC fight, whether it's live or a rerun, or if you're watching this show or listening to it as well, make sure you've got the beer that's always in your corner. Modelo Espacial. Brewed for those with a fighting spirit. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports in Chicago, Illinois. All right. Now, back to my conversation with the great GSP.
By the way, how are you doing? How are you? Because I know you have social media and you don't use it very much, but lately you've been posting a lot of workouts at home and trying to give people, you know, some positive things to do. How are you handling what's going on in the world?
Yeah, one thing I guess that I can do to help people in this situation is to, I mean, people that want to stay active and they have to be isolated, I mean, I can help them, you know, like I'm not only a fighter, I know fitness a lot, and I'm thinking that maybe next week I'm going to do like a live training with my fans. Okay. I've been posting some videos, but I've been having a lot of requests of doing like a live training. So maybe next week what I'm going to do, I'm going to do a live training with them. It will be accessible to everybody, not only if you're a professional fighter, but it could be also for someone who just wanted to be active and be in good shape. I will have different exercise that will be for different levels of people. So maybe next week I'll do something like that to have fun. That's my way I think that I can give back to society in a situation like this.
I think everyone is going through like a roller coaster now. Sometimes we feel nervous, depressed, happy, uncertain future that makes you anxious. Do you have feelings like that too? And if so, how do you get over it?
I believe that what we live now, in the situation we live, it's bad for society in the short term. because if some people get sick and die, unfortunately, it's very sad. But in the long term for humanity, for a long term for the nature, you know, I think could be a good thing because it make us open our eyes and realize that we're not the master of the universe in a way that small little things like this can affect the entire world. And it's small. It's not a big thing. You know, imagine if something bad, like bad happened, like, of course, there's a lot of people that die. It's very sad. But there's a lot of worse thing than this that can happen, you know, and I don't give myself the right to complain because fortunately I'm very lucky. I can take a hit, but unfortunately there's a lot of people right now have a very hard time. They lose their job and everything, but what doesn't kill you make you stronger. And I'm sure they will come back, stronger from that situation after. They will enlight their life in a better way when they're gonna come out of this, you know, and when they're gonna see the light at the end of the tunnel, they'll be stronger, you know.
Last week, a huge story was the UFC was trying to put on an event in the midst of this. The entire sports world shut down, right? NHL, NBA, Major League Baseball, soccer, and the UFC tried, but in the end, they didn't come through with it because the governor of California called Disney, ESPN, said no more. What did you make of the way that they were handling it? Dana White was very defiant that we were going to put on this event. Did you think that was smart for the fighters to fight in the midst of this?
Yeah, there's two ways that you can see it. I believe there's a way that you can see, oh, it's irresponsible because if you do that, that means some people will break the law of being isolated. But there's another way that you can see it, that if they do it in a good way, that people stay isolated I think it was on an island. I don't know exactly what it is. I haven't checked. It could entertain people who are stuck at home, and it can, you know, give them some, I guess, some entertainment. I don't know if there's a way to do it without breaking the rules of isolation in a way. You know, if you're in an island, maybe, I guess there is, but I don't know all the infrastructure of the project.
Would you feel comfortable fighting in the midst of something like this?
Well, right now No, because right now I'm wealthy and I'm healthy. Right. But if you go back maybe 18 years ago or like, you know, like in the old days, I didn't have a lot of money. I would have done anything to be world champion. Anything, my friend. And I don't know if I would have done it, but man, I was game to do anything to be world champion at the time. You know, I would have probably do it blindly without thinking of any of the consequences. I don't know. Because if you're on an island and you get ready for a fight, a lot of guys, they say, yeah, it's not good to do it like that because you're taking out of your natural environment. It's true, but your opponent is on the same boat as you. So your boat have the anti-cap. So it's not an advantage to you or to him. Your boat having this handicap, you know, this, you have to both get out of your comfort zone. I don't know. It all depends how it's done. I haven't read about it too much to see what was the infrastructure and how the project would have been made. I just heard the story, but I don't know how it's possible to do that. It would be maybe in a private plane. If I don't know how to, I have no idea if they are tested before the plane, then tested. I have no idea if there's a way to do it by respecting the government instruction in terms of isolation.
Are you getting into more acting? I saw you with an acting coach recently on your Instagram. Are you doing more of that?
Yeah, I'm having acting class every week. I've been practicing a lot right now. I put a lot of my energy into it, and I'm doing a big project, and unfortunately for a contractual reason, I'm not allowed to talk about it. I can't tell you what it is, but you'll see it's a big, big thing coming up.
Okay. Wow. Okay. You know, there's a lot of new fans, and we'll wrap up with this. There's a lot of new fans out there who maybe didn't see you in your prime, didn't have a chance to watch those early fights. If there's one that you could recommend to them to watch during this downtime, what's the one that comes to mind? Your favorite fight of yours that you say, if you want to see George at his best, which one do you recommend?
There is not one fight that I watch that I tell myself, oh, that was a perfect fight. There's always something that I say to myself. I say, shit, I wish I would have done this, or I should have done that. But there is fight that I'm way more proud than others. Like, one of my fight I perform very well is Thiago Alves. I perform very well. John Fitch, I perform very well. BJ Penn, perform very well. Nick Diaz and Matt Serra too, perform very well. Matthews too, perform very well. Tree, I perform very well as well. Yeah.
And here's the biggest question of them all. To answer a long-standing internet story that came out many moons ago, is it true that Georges St-Pierre, in his prime, dated the great Mandy Moore? Is it true, George? Tell us. True or false? Is it true?
This was a real rumor.
Yes.
Man, I'm going to tell you the truth, okay?
Tell me.
You're not the first guy that asked me this, and it's not true. I met her. But I met her maybe one or two or three times. One time it was in a restaurant with a bunch of friends, and another time was before a fight, because you know Dana and Lorenzo like to bring celebrities sometimes to meet you before a fight. But before a fight, it's not a good moment to meet someone. Like, I remember I met Shaquille O'Neal one time before. I think it was before Frank Triggs, or I say, "Hi, nice meeting you," and I didn't care. Like, if I would have met him in a normal situation, I would be like, wow, you know, I would enjoy it more. So, no, it's not true. I mean, I will tell you the truth. It's not true.
Last thing, George, any positive message to the people? People are down right now. They look up to you. You're one of the most famous athletes in the world, certainly in Canada. You're an idol to many people. Is there anything that you want to say to the people during this crazy time?
Yeah, man. What I would like to say to them, stay active, eat well, sleep well, to boost your immune system the best you can, and respect the advice of the expert. And man, what doesn't kill us make us stronger. You know, I know a lot of people are going through a very hard time, and when you're gonna come out at the end of this, at the end you'll be stronger. You'll be ready to, because you will beat this situation. You'll be ready to face any situation after that. I mean, it's a crisis, and just stay strong, stay hard and strong, and you will be winner at the end of it.
Wise words from the great GSP again. So great to talk to him. Hadn't talked to him in well over a year. I still think he's the man. I think he's the GOAT. I know some people think John Jones, and that's fine. Some people think Anderson Silva, Demetrius Johnson. Before it's all said and done, I'd love to see him fight Khabib Nurmagomedov at 165. It doesn't even have to be for a belt. It could have been like back when Matt Hughes and Hoist Gracie fought at UFC 60 back in the day. It wasn't for a belt. It was a catchweight, but I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon. Unfortunate, but he gave us some great memories, some great moments, some great fights, and it was really nice to catch up with him. Now, we go from one great in MMA to a great in the world of professional basketball. And Shaquille O'Neal, larger than life, right? I mean, this guy is one of the great icons in the history of sport. I interviewed him twice before, once at UFC 118 in Boston, right after he joined the Celtics. He was there, and I got a chance to talk to him. And I also interviewed him in 2014 when the UFC was in Orlando, has a home there in Orlando. In fact, they did a pre-fight press conference at his house, at the gym in his house. It was wild. And it was Fabricio Werdum versus Travis Brown that night. So it was cool to talk to him. And now I got to catch up with him to talk about his love of MMA, his new show, Shaq Life, a little NBA stuff as well. It was a great time. Enjoy.
Shaq Diesel, how are you, sir?
I'm doing good. How are you, sir?
I'm doing really well. Thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate this. I was just singing your praises for the last 5 minutes. I don't know if you heard any of that.
I appreciate that. Sorry I'm late. A woodpecker got into one of my tree houses, and I was trying to catch him.
Did you catch him?
No, I didn't. I was just playing. That was a joke.
Oh, okay. Sorry. It was very believable, to be honest. You live a very interesting life.
Speaking of which,
you have this new show that's out on TNT every Thursday night. It's called Shaq Life. It premiered last week to a ton of praise, and I've enjoyed it immensely, and especially now in this crazy time, it's great to have new content and fun things to get our mind off of things. But why I'm here, I'm the MMA guy at ESPN, and the episode that's airing tomorrow night is very MMA heavy. There's a lot of famous MMA fighters. So first, can you tell us about the show, the concept of the show, what it's all about?
Well, MMA is the reason I became a champion. I always used to practice basketball. It wasn't enough. Because when I played basketball, it wasn't a basketball. It was more wrestling. So when I trained MMA with John Burke, a friend of mine down in Orlando, I came back in the best shape of my life. That was in 2001. Dominated. So I'm a creature of habit. Did it again. Won the second championship. Did it again. Won the third championship. Got cute. Got away from it. Lost. Got traded to Miami. Did it again. Won the fourth championship. So, you know, MMA is something that always kept my heart rate up. It was something I was very interested in. I'm a physical guy. I like physicality. You talk about athletes. MMA athletes are probably the best athletes on the planet. You know, the training that they go through, you know, the physical stuff that they go through. I've been to almost all of the top UFC fights. Those guys are specimens. And I'm a sport. I wish I could hit some of those NBA players I used to play against just like that. So I've definitely been a fan of MMA. I was introduced to MMA by Vitor Belfort. We were at a camp in Hawaii, and Vitor just comes up behind me and grabs me. And I'm like, hey, what are you doing? He said, no. I'm a big fan of yours. I just wanted to show you what I do. I'm having a fight tonight. And Vitor fought this big dude in a lumberjack suit. And he put him down in 5 seconds. And ever since then, I became a fan. And then I met Dana White. And, you know, me and Dana White are friends. And, you know, I'm able to, you know, go to the training facility and, you know, watch all those specimens train. So it's a great thing for me. And I love MMA. So I said to myself, let me try it. Let me train. I wanted to fight a couple of pro guys, but they were having matches. So they put me against a guy my size, who was an amateur, he wasn't pro, and I'll let you watch the episode to see what happened. But listen, I did call out Hongman Choi a long time ago because I've never fought anyone my size. Ever since 10 years old, I've heard the phrase, pick on somebody your size, pick on somebody your size. So at the time, a couple of years ago, if he was willing to fight, I would have fought him, Hongman Choi.
How serious did those talks get? How far? Did you ever actually seriously pursue it?
No, I just mentioned it. I wanted somebody to come back. Well, actually, I wanted Dana to come back and say, I'll set it up. But nobody ever did. So, it just turned into, you know, I say something, he say something, I say something, he say something. But I definitely would have, you know, gave it a try.
Yeah. So in this episode, you actually, like I said, you get your hands dirty. You grapple an actual UFC fighter. I don't know if I want to give away should I give away who the fighter is, or should we not say who the fighter is? We won't say what happens, but should we say who the fighter is? Because people know who this man is.
Yeah. Go ahead. Tell him.
Greg Hardy. You go up against Greg Hardy, the former NFL defensive player of the year.
Greg Hardy is the strongest guy I've ever wrestled in my life.
Really?
Nice kid, strong, taught me a lot. And if we got into it, it'll probably be a long day for me. He's physical. He likes to fight just like me. He likes to bang. And he actually taught me a lot because, you know, when I go to my little grappling school in Orlando, it's really nobody my size. So to go up against somebody with that strength and that, it was tough for me.
I'm not going to give away what happened, but it's very clear watching that you know what you're doing. And like you said, you've been a big fan of this for a long time. I'm curious, though, when you were, you know, playing in the NBA, when you were in your prime, didn't the teams not want you to train in MMA? I talked to Kristaps Porzingis. He's a big fan as well. And he's like, oh, the teams don't want me to train because they have so much invested in you. So how'd you get around that?
I had a couple clauses in my contract. I was allowed to have a motorcycle. The only thing I couldn't do was scuba dive and skydive. Everything else I could do.
Wow.
I could go to concerts and rave. I can do boxing matches. I can play another chair. Like, I've had that. So, but I couldn't, like I said, I couldn't scuba dive or skydive. And then, listen, it's training. You know, they just wanted me to, you know, come back and, you know, some type of playing shape. Everyone knows I didn't come back in basketball shape because that's not, because I always said to myself, who do I need to get ready for? I get ready when I get ready. But, you know, I always used to train with my hands, you know, MMA training, all that stuff.
Recently, Israel Adesanya, the middleweight champion of the UFC, he showed a DM that you sent him saying that you said to him that he's your favorite fighter. And I just want to confirm, Izzy's a truth speaker, but did you in fact send this DM or was this photoshopped?
No, I actually did send him to him, but I have a lot of favorite fighters. He's one of my favorite fighters. Francis, I don't want to mispronounce his last name.
Can you say Ngannou?
Yeah, Francis Ngannou is my favorite fighter. Yoel Romero, who's a friend of mine, is my favorite fighter. And I used to like all the old school fighters, too. I used to love Cabbage. Remember Cabbage?
Cabbage Correa.
But Cabbage, Tank Abbott, man, I used to love all those guys. So, but, yes, I did send him that because he's a joy to watch and, you know, he's done a lot for the sport. And the good thing about MMA is every 3 or 4 years you get a person that just comes out of nowhere and just, you know, takes over the sport. Conor McGregor is, you know, one of my favorites. So I just enjoy watching these phenomenal athletes perform.
And so the premise of the show is you want to show us about your life, but you also have aspirations. Like, do you want to be – I'm not so – I remember the Shaq Fu days, like you and the Fushnikins and your rap albums. But are you – you're into, like, DJing now, right? So you're trying to get into shape for that.
Yeah, so, you know, the premise of the show is how do you do so much? And I said, well, it's simple. And he's like, it can't be simple. You do too much. I said, well, I'm showing you. So I'm just showing everybody my life and, you know, how I do it. But, look, I've been DJing since 88. I've been doing shows 10,000, 30,000, 100,000 because, you know, the concept is always the same. If people are going to pay money to watch you perform, you put on a show. And the reason why I DJ now is I miss the show. I miss coming in and 7-1, and, you know, I just miss that. So, you know, when I'm going out here with these kids, and I know what they want because I have children. So I have, like, you know, internal research at the house. I know what's hot. I know what's not hot. I know what to play. I know what not to play. So when I go out there and those kids pay their hard-earned money to see the Shaq, I got to give them a show.
As I mentioned, people are starving for positive content, things to get their mind off of things. What do you do? I mean, because your life is so busy, right? You do so much, not just the TV work, as you mentioned. You have so many businesses. Do you have moments during this past month where everything's shut down, where you're starting to feel down? And if so, how do you get out of that? I'm sure a lot of people would look to you for advice.
Well, my thing is I try to take a minute, 2 minutes out of the day to inspire people. So me and my kids, we've been having kitchen concerts. We do TikTok dances, whatever I can do to just make people smile. It's tough for a lot of million people. 17 million people filed for unemployment. You know, this, you know, a lot of people have you know, lost family members. My condolences goes out to Carl Anthony Towns. His mom, you know, just passed away the other day. So this is real life for a lot of people. I just try to make people laugh. I don't sit in my house and say, I'm down because I'm not really down. You know, I just, you know, we just have to follow the rules, continue with the social distancing. But I just, you know, just try to make people laugh. You know, like if I could say something or do something, just have you pick up your phone and laugh for a couple of seconds, restart your thinking, restart your battery, I'm happy to do that. But I don't sit in my house and go, oh, woe is me. No, I can't do that.
How do you feel about the NBA coming back? Do you feel like this is something that needs to happen, or would you rather them err on the side of caution?
I would rather everybody be cautious. And, you know, Adam Silver, he's done a great job. He was at the forefront of it. He said, you know what, safety of the players, I'm going to cancel this thing. You know, I just wish that we would get a definitive date. I'm hearing 14 days, April 10th, April 30th, May 30th. So, but I would love everyone to be safe. I just wanted to get back to normal. But I'm a guy that follows rules and regulations, so you know, I'm just sitting back like every other American, just, you know, waiting and seeing. But, you know, hopefully there's a couple young, brilliant doctors and scientists that's, you know, getting a hold of this thing, and we can make it start to, you know, get the numbers down a little bit.
There's been some talk of, like, holding all the games in one location. Bahamas, Las Vegas has been brought up. Have you heard any of this? And if so, do you think that's a feasible idea, like to play all the games in one spot?
I've heard it, but I haven't heard it from the powers to be. So, you know, crazy thing about the world we live in now is so many information sources. You don't know, you know, who's saying what, or, you know, what information is true, what information is not true. So we'll just have to sit back.
One of the guys that you link up with in the show that airs tomorrow, in the episode that airs tomorrow, is Jorge Masvidal, who scored the fastest knockout in UFC history. And he shows you the knee.
Also one of my favorite fighters. Jorge, I forgot to mention you. I apologize. I like him because, to me, there's two different type of fighters, right? There's the fighters that come in perfect shape, no body fat, boom, boom, boom. And then there's the ones that just like to fight, like me. That's what Jorge is. Like, when I saw him, I knew he was a fighter, but I didn't know he was as bad as he was. Like, he showed me a couple moves, and I was like, okay. But then when he got in the ring, that actually was my first time seeing a fight. But then when he got in the ring, I was like, wow, this guy is real. Like, I can tell who's real and who's not real. So he's definitely one of my favorites. And, you know, what he did to my guy. Diaz brothers, Nick. You know, I love the Diaz brothers ever since they first came out. But he can fight. Miami is in the house, and he's going to be around for a while.
The thing about you is you have a heart of gold, and as you mentioned, you try to brighten people's days. I wanted to ask you about two kind of famous MMA stories that I found out about you that maybe a lot of people don't know. You were at the UFC event in Anaheim last August. Nate fought Anthony Pettis on that card. Daniel Cormier, another Louisiana guy, fought on that card, and he lost. Do you remember running into him backstage after he lost? He was very emotional. His wife was emotional, and you shared some words of wisdom with him. Do you remember this at all?
Yeah, I do. I just hugged him and said, great job. Sometimes you win them, sometimes you lose them, but you're still the champ to me. No. It's only one guy that's undefeated now. Everybody else has taken a loss. The only guy that's undefeated in the sport and been up, started, he's still undefeated, Floyd Mayweather. Everybody else has won, been up, lost, got it back. So I just told him, I said, champ, hang in there.
And my other favorite Shaq UFC moment is when you were next to Max Holloway's son when he lost in Atlanta almost exactly a year ago, and his son was crying. Do you remember that? His dad was in there. That's got to be traumatic for a kid to see his dad getting beat up, and you were there telling him to feel better. That was amazing to watch.
Yeah, it was there, and I have children of my own, and my kids used to be like that when I lose or when I miss a couple free throws and people talk about their daddy. So I just grabbed his son and said, hey, I'm Uncle Shaq. Your daddy gonna be all right. Don't worry about it. When all this is over, you make sure you give your daddy a hug and tell him you love him. So I was just trying to, be a great uncle at the time.
And can I ask you, are you familiar with John Jones and the troubles that he has had? He's considered the best in our sport, but sometimes he can't seem to stay out of trouble. No one was more famous than you back in your day, and you did a very good job. You know, you lived in a different time, of course, no social media, so there weren't, as many people watching you. But how did you, avoid all that sort of stuff and avoid trying to, get yourself in the wrong position?
Well, I love John Jones, and if he ever needs to talk to me, he can call me. I don't want to speak on John Jones as if I'm holier than thou. I've never been that type of person. I love John. I don't want to talk about his discretions online like this without him being here. But John needs to know and understand that if he needs anything from me, he can call me, he can text me, and I wish him the best. I wish his family the best, and he's also one of my, favorite fighters. But again, I'm not going to sit here and say, John should do this, John should do that. We have too many people doing that now, kicking people where when they're down. I'm never going to do that. So, John, if you're watching this, I know you probably are. You know how to contact me. If you want to talk to me about anything, I'm always there for you, brother.
Much respect. Can I also ask you, a lot of people are excited about the Chicago Bulls documentary that's coming out starting on Sunday. Do you remember that season, the 97-98 Bulls, you were playing with the Lakers. You played them twice. One game you were out, the second game you played. Do you remember playing that particular Bulls team?
Of course I do. We either won or we lost.
Yes.
I know they were hard to beat. I finally revealed that when I first got in the league, I was terrified of Jordan. Because the reason why I was terrified, because as a kid, it's like you're watching a god. Now you're on the same court with God. And all the stuff that he was doing when I was a kid is true. He can fly. He can bump you in the air, still be in the air when you come down, lay it up. He's in perfect condition. His jump shot is crazy. If he steals a ball on the break, all the fans are going to stand up and he's going to dunk it. So everything I was seeing when I was a kid was really true. A lot of guys, I was like, oh, you're not, I saw you on TV, but now that I'm here, you're not really that good. But with him, everything you saw as a kid was true. But, once I got over that, and I started to, you know, play a little better. But that team, the one that went 72-10, I knew they was going to win the whole year.
Yeah. Well, you guys actually beat them. You beat the last MJ Bulls team. You beat them by 25, one of their worst losses of that season in February of that year, 1998. And afterwards,
you know
why is that?
That's why. Yeah. See that right there?
Yes. Afterwards, MJ said, someone asked him, do you think you'll see these guys in the finals? And he said, I don't know about them. We'll be there. I'm not sure if they'll make it. In the end, you guys didn't make it to the finals that year. But it actually got me thinking. I feel like the three-peat Lakers, I'm not trying to make a hot take here, but the three-peat Lakers in your primes would have beaten those Bulls in their primes.
Of course, yes, easily, yeah.
Why?
Because I would have killed Luke Longley, Bill Winning, Cartwright, yeah. So the factor is me and my free throw shooting. So, okay, another question is, our Lakers in their prime and Chicago in their prime, who is Phil Jackson with? Is he with us or is he with them?
I think he's with them because he was with them first.
So he would have tried the Hacker Shack thing, which so the I still would have averaged my 28-29, but the key would have been the free throws. So, you know, with me, it's always 50-50, so hopefully it would have been on. If I'd been on, we win. If I'd been off, we lose. But, you know, I love having these conversations. They would have did this, we would have did that. But I can strictly say I think we would have beat them.
Well, the one common denominator from all those six finals were they always play teams with weak centers, right? Luke Longley, Greg Ostertag, right? You know, like Duckworth, the Lakers, that Vlade Divac was. They never played a dominant center, so that and Kobe would have been on. So I think that this is a very legitimate argument. I know people will say I'm crazy now, but I think you guys would have beat them even with Del Harris as coach.
I agree, and I also want to say I've been a fan of yours for a while. You have great knowledge of sports. I appreciate your hard work. I really do.
Wow, thank you. That means a lot. I thought you didn't know who I was, Shaq.
Stop it! I know who you are.
You just made my day.
That's why I agreed to do this interview.
Well, I appreciate that. I won't keep you any longer. Yeah. Let me ask you one last thing, Shaq. One last thing.
Yep.
You were asked recently your favorite sports moment involving you. You said, of course, 2000 Western Conference Final, the alley-oop, right? But as a fan, not involving you, where you were just a fan rooting, is there one that comes to mind?
Give me some time. It was a moment that made me want to become an NBA player. Because I was a medium-level juvenile delinquent. I was more into football. I was more into hurting people, right? Never basketball, I was okay. It was two moments. So when John Conkak signed the big contract, then I really started focusing on basketball. My father takes me to a game, Madison Square Garden. We're sitting up top. I know who Dr. J is. He's smooth. I like him because he's smooth, afro. He goes baseline and throws it down. Crowd goes crazy. And that's when I look at my father and say, you know what, this is what I want to do when I get older. So shout out to Dr. J, because when he went baseline, the crowd went crazy. It's just like all the basketball angels under my body right then. Like I kind of got scared and I just felt something I never felt before. I went home and I started practicing and, you know, I just, you know, really became good and just, you know, stuck with it. So that's probably my answer. So shout out to Julius Erving for help creating the character known as Shaq.
How about that? The great Shaquille O'Neal knows who I am. I can die and go to heaven. What a life. Unbelievable. Again, I watch Shaq Life. It's a lot of fun. If you're looking for something to do Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific on TNT, a lot of fun, especially if you're not even an MMA fan, you'll enjoy it. But if you're an MMA fan, you'll really enjoy it because you'll see some familiar faces like Masvidal and Kayla Harrison. You'll see Francis Ngannou, Greg Hardy, and it all leads to a grappling match between him and Greg Hardy. So do check it out, and I appreciate him hooking me up. I also appreciate Rory Karp, who's the executive producer of the show. He's been very kind to me over the years, put me on the 30 for 30. I Hate Christian Laettner has also produced the Ric Flair 30 for 30 and has produced a bunch of stuff. In fact, he is the producer of Dana White's Looking for a Fight. Great guy. He hooked me up. He's producing that show, and it was really nice to work with him on this. So, again, thank you to Shaq and the team for doing that. And also, be sure to check out The Last Dance that's premiering on Sunday on ESPN, 10-part documentary series on the great Chicago Bulls dynasty, and in particular their final season together, the 97-98 Bulls team, which eventually beat the Utah Jazz. Great stuff. Produced by my good friend, Jason Hare. I have a lot of good friends. Another good friend, TST. Time now for everyone's favorite segment of the week. Let's hit it.
TST's Minimalist Tip of the Week.
Ariel Helwani, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well, TST. How are you?
I'm doing great. I have relocated. I am now being a minimalist in New York rather than Connecticut. I'm from upstate New York, so I'm currently have made a makeshift studio in my childhood bedroom. I have my computer, which is serving as my recording device, currently on a mini fridge, which is serving as my desk, and I'm sitting on two pillows.
Now, you're with your family over there?
Yes.
Are they minimalists as well?
They are not. No, they are distancing themselves for social reasons right now, and then also for philosophical reasons, they also distance themselves from me. They're not minimalist at all.
Wait, what do you mean? They're not in the house?
No, they're in the house, but like they're making me wear a mask, and they're spraying me with disinfectant spray everywhere I go. Like they're literally following me around with this can.
Oh my God. Would it be fair to say they didn't want you to come?
They wanted me to come because I'm their son, and they want to see me, so they'll take me under any circumstances, but they're definitely very weary of that I have been more places than they have over the past few weeks.
Yeah, you've been a little reckless, let's be honest.
I've not been reckless, all right? I've been going to some parks. I've been maybe playing some basketball with friends. I've been fine.
I mean, that's just ridiculous. Is it fair to also say that you kind of broke? Like, you know, we were talking about you needing that social interaction, feeling lonely. Did you feel like you had to get out of Connecticut?
Yeah, definitely fair to say. I think I was just kind of getting tired of being holed up in one space. I'm very much big on like having a change of scenery, and I was just having no change of scenery, being up in my space, working in my space, being in there all the time. I just kind of need to get out just for a few days just to, you know, just kind of losing a little creative muscle and was starting to get a little unmotivated, which is very rare for me. So I was like, all right, I need to change my outside environment to change my internal environment, you know?
Of course, I can totally understand that, and I think it's a good idea to go back home with your family, be around them, change the environment, have a little more things at your disposal, right? I'm assuming they have furniture and things that you could sit on, so that's good. Probably food as well, so that is good. By the way, shout out to One Lens in China, who sent me a Instagram story last week, and I believe I want to make sure. Yeah, this is a woman. I just want to make sure. She writes, a week late, but following TST's Minimalist Tip of the Week, and it was a picture of her donating blood. How about that? You're inspiring people to go out there and donate blood.
I love to hear that. Can I get a mensch of the week here?
You know, it would be anti-mensch to almost like congratulate ourselves. That's not a mensch like thing. So we can't, you know, a lot of people have said to me, hey, you know, Ariel, you do so many good things for so many people. Why don't you ever include yourself? And it's just not the mensch like thing to do. So if someone else wants to, and certainly to request a mensch, an honorable mention would not be a very mensch like thing. So, you know, I can't really do that now that you've asked for it. But how about a tip of the week? You got one of those?
So I've got a tip, and this is a great tip for people who are holed up all day. If you really want to embrace minimalism, this is like an amazing first step. And I cannot take credit for this. Let me preface this. This is a tip that I got from the online minimalist community. These got two guys, Josh Milburn and Ryan Nicodemus, to be exact. So, Ariel, do you know what a packing party is?
I do not.
Okay, so a packing party. What you do is, if you really want to figure out in life what is essential, and I think that's what we're all doing right now, figuring out what is essential, whether it's essential workers, essential items that you need to get through the day, this is what will help you figure out what's essential. So basically, you pack up everything, every little thing, big and small, in your home into boxes. You act like you are moving, okay?
Okay.
This is a great activity to do while you have nothing to do, because this can take up an entire day. You pack up everything, and then you start pulling out things from those boxes as you actually need them for your day-to-day activities. So basically, you're asking yourself this question, do I need this thing so much that I'm willing to go into a box and grab it and go through work where it's maybe on the bottom of the box and you have to dig for it? And then maybe if you kind of ask yourself the question again, you're like, you know what, maybe I don't really need it that badly. Then maybe you realize on a larger level that you really don't need it at all. So by the time you're doing this packing party, you're you're seeing, you know, if you do it for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, whatever, you'll, at the end of it, you'll see, okay, what have I actually pulled out and what have I left in the box? And the stuff that you leave in the box, you can kind of realize, maybe I don't need this at all. Maybe I don't need this as much as I think I did. So if you want to really get rid of stuff, really find out what is important, what you use, what you don't use, what you might never use, throw yourself a little packing party.
I have a really hard time getting rid of things. Like, I will admit to this, and probably I'm the antithesis of a minimalist. My wife and I argue about this. Like, I don't want to throw away any of my kids' projects. You know, like, my daughter will scribble. It's like, I don't want to throw any of it. I think it's all bad luck. And I want to cherish them and put them in a pile somewhere. I just want to have them at my disposal. So all of this is just a lot to handle for me right now. Okay. I'm very emotional right now. And the idea of doing a packing party just sounds like the craziest thing I've ever heard.
It's radical.
It is radical. I mean, I admit this is bad. Like, I have a hard time getting rid of clothes. It's not because I don't want to help people. It's just I have an emotional attachment and I get very sensitive. Like, my kids' clothes. No, don't get rid of that. We one time went to the park and he was wearing that and it's stupid. It's dumb. I admit it, but it's the kind of person that I am.
It's understandable. I mean, I think, all of us and even minimalists do. Like, we have emotions. We are not averse to having emotions. We have emotional attachments to things, but as you get better at it and flexing that muscle, like learning that muscle over time, you just kind of learn to detach emotions from possessions and that realize mementos, memories, the memories aren't with the things themselves. They're within you and you can't rely on the things for the memories.
That was deep. That was deep.
Yes. And that was TST's Minimalist Tip of the Week, brought to you by Modelo, setting the gold standard for authentic Mexican beer since 1925. Modelo, brewed for those with a fighting spirit.
By the way, I was thinking a lot about what you said a couple of weeks ago regarding photos and whatnot. Mm. Maybe the craziest thing you've ever said on the, like, to get rid of photo albums. I mean, those are precious. You sit around, you reminisce,
it's all digital, baby.
Yeah, but you can't do it. It's not the same. You can't sit around and just like go on your phone and things like that. It's not the same. That one really stuck with me. I've been thinking about that one a lot. It's like, this guy is out here trying to kill our memories. Like, you are trying to rid people of good moments in their lives.
I am not. I am all about positivity, Ariel, and that's why I have these two great reviews for you podcast reviews. All right, so the first one comes from Franzia Drinking Guy. Interesting name. Mm. Shout out, Franzia. 5 stars. Title, Don't Cut Interviews Short.
Ah.
Best podcast by ESPN, by genre, and maybe overall. Keep the guests on longer. Don't disrespect fighters by asking them to come on, then tell them to leave because of ESPN producers. This one's for you, Helwani, and shout out TST. Miss you on Buster's show, where we knew you as Troy.
Wow. So you were famous in a previous life and a previous podcast as well.
Yeah. I left the baseball world to come over to the MMA world.
Did Buster give you this much airtime, though?
Actually, yeah, we talked a lot. He let me talk about my precious Texas Rangers a lot. I kind of played the role of like deranged Texas Rangers fan, similar to now how I'm deranged Colby Covington fan. I was that on the baseball pod.
Interesting. And by the way, as far as the length of the interview, I mean, you know how I feel about
it. I mean, that's all corporate jig. Like, that's not me.
Yeah, I mean, it's corporate jig. There's a reason why we call you TST around here. All right, what else you got?
How High 52 has a 5-star review called DC and Helwani is the best.
Ooh.
Hey ESPN, if you're looking to spruce up your morning national radio shows or primetime on ESPN, then get DC and Helwani on there. Oh. I'd love to hear them for 3 hours in the morning on the radio, or even better, an hour spot at 5 p.m. ET on ESPN television every day.
Yes, I agree. I think that one of the lone positive byproducts to come out of this whole pandemic is the birth of DC and Helwani.
I'm a big fan of DC and Helwani. I like you guys a lot together. I'm a big fan of DC. I didn't really know much about him before you started working with him, but obviously he's an all-time great. You're willing to throw him in that all-time great conversation. Great guy. And I love our, and he's also a fan of minimalism.
He is. He's very interested in your movement. You didn't know about this, but someone sent me a really nice message. Someone named, Kaluzzi, Kaluzzij2 wrote this to me. This is honestly the best thing in the world right now, referring to DC and Helwani. Ariel, you've single-handedly kept me from sinking back into depression and dark places. I couldn't be more thankful for the work you've done during this pandemic. I'll never turn my back on you like Rousey and others. Yes. I'll be forever indebted to you and DC. Thank you very much, my friend, and stick with us. We will be here with you. By the way, did you ever watch a GSP fight before?
No. Any one of these recommended fights you've given over the past few weeks, I I haven't even given second thought to watching.
That is crazy to me. Can you do me a favor?
Sure.
It's very easy to find. Just go watch UFC 83, George St. Pierre, Matt Serra, because the anniversary is next Tuesday, so it would be timely if we could talk about it next week. Just watch it and try to get a sense, because they, if you find the clip, and it's very easy to find, and I could tell you where to find it, but you know, you could go a million different places, but the build up to that fight was great. The atmosphere, the buzz in Montreal was electric. It was just very special. So could you do me one favor and watch a classic GSP fight for me?
Only if you agree to take me to Fight Island.
Listen, Fight Island, Zuffa Boxing, let me tell you something. Helwani Boxing is more real than those things, all right?
Whoa.
You know what I'm saying? Helwani Boxing. Join the movement, baby. Get the ball. Get out there. Stay fit. You know, what about that? Give me some props for that. Give me some props. I've been trying to get people to be active. We've got a lot of people. And by the way, I have an announcement regarding Helwani Boxing that will be coming later on this week. We're going to be doing a lot of good things. So I'll leave it at that. But let's just say Helwani Boxing is a lot more real than other people think, okay? All right. We are out of time. Thank you, TST. Great to talk to you as always. Be safe out there with the folks. Let me know how it is over at the Crossgates Mall. I love Crossgates Mall. Shout out to Albany and the good people in, what is that? West? No, it's not Western. It's Central New York? Central New York, I believe, right? Shout out to Albany.
We're upstate.
All right, fine. Yes, you're right. Western New York is Buffalo. Central is Syracuse. Upstate is Albany en route to my hometown of Montreal. I think it's the I-87, is it not?
Heck yeah, I-87. That was the thing to do. When you're 18 years old and could legally drink, head straight up to Montreal.
Amen. God bless the great city of Montreal that has produced the likes of GSP. All right, we're out of time. God bless you all. Thanks for listening. Thanks for downloading. Thanks for subscribing. Thanks for commenting. Thanks for reviewing. Please continue to do it. We're trying our hardest for all of you here, and we love you very much. Be safe out there. We'll talk to you soon.